It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Teamsters report their membership at 1.3 million employed in a variety of public and private industries with hundreds of locals nationwide. As Teamsters Local 200 votes for decertification, we learn about why employees from Keurig Dr. Pepper facilities in Eau Claire, Oshkosh, and Tomah are cutting ties with the union. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Mark Mix is president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. Mark, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Kate, it's good to be on with you. Thanks for the opportunity. And it sounds like it's going to be a great weekend in Wisconsin.
Yes, it is. Thanks for being
Weather-wise.
Here. Yes.
Yeah.
We also have Ray Kotz with us, an employee at Keurig Dr. Pepper in Oshkosh. Ray, welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Ray, let's start with you. You have 20 years with Keurig Dr. Pepper, and Teamsters Local 200 has been there for your tenure. What marked the tipping point for you wanting to remove the union?
Recently, I went back to a union position. I actually spent some time in some non-union position, so I got to see the full benefits the company was offering. And then I ended up I went back to a union position due to the money they were throwing at CDL Class A CDL drivers, and I ended up like losing vacation and losing benefits. Moving back over to the union position.
What did you find as the biggest differences between, as you say, working in a union position versus a non-union position with the company?
The biggest thing was just that the benefits were worse. My vacation under the union capped out at 4 weeks. Under the company, I've got almost 7 weeks of paid vacation after 20 years. Under the union, it was 4. That's a huge difference on a yearly, calendar.
So it was the time off. Were there other types of benefits that the union position couldn't provide you as a driver?
We just did special enrollment with the company plan, and I actually got additional benefits. At pretty much the same cost. My cost went down $2 a week on my benefits, and I was able to add legal insurance. I doubled my dental coverage. You can double your vision coverage. The union, under the union plan, I was paying. It wasn't a lot, but I had to pay for a short-term disability and long-term disability. That's all included for free under the company plan. So my medical, dental, health benefits increased.
Okay, so you had better health care coverage at a lower cost point, better time off. I want to turn to you, Mark, because looking at these statistics here, the Economic Policy Institute says 191,000 people joined a union last year, but overall, the percentage of workers represented by unions is down from past years. What do you make of this shift in unionization?
Yeah, well, first of all, Kate, thanks for the opportunity to talk. And Ray, it's good to hear you. I have never met Ray, although one of our attorneys helped Ray navigate the labyrinthine-like process of decertification of a union, which is very difficult. But back to the statistics and what's happening, there are more jobs being created. And if we look at it from a right-to-work state versus non-right-to-work state, the jobs are heading there. And in 19 of the 27 states in 2023, the union density increased. So in 70% of the right-to-work states, the union density actually increased. But in 13 of the 23 non-right-to-work states, the 4 union states, that was a reduction in 13, almost 57% of the states that are non-right-to-work had a reduction in union density. So, one of the things that Ray talked about I think is important is that, look, the union can provide certain things. They can provide benefits and vacation. But when employees look at it, they find that sometimes the benefits are not what they're cracked up to be. And the fact that the union contract locks you in for 3, 4, or 5 years when environments can change, cost of living can change, conditions can change, we saw in from 2020 to 2020 on an annual basis, it makes sense to basically have a little bit of leverage and a little bit of flexibility. And unfortunately, with union contracts, that really exists. And so for Ray and his team out there, for I think what almost 60% of I think 60% of the workers that had the vote about this Teamster representation, they said no and looked for a better package that came from the employer.
Ray, can you talk us through the vote and how it went down?
We spent a merchandiser over in Toma wanted to kick this off because we had the three branches, Eau Claire, Toma, and Oshkosh, and there wasn't really any communication between the employees of the branches because they're so far apart across the state. I mean, they're almost 3 hours away from Oshkosh each. So a merchandiser in Toma actually got a hold of me, and then I found out Toma was interested. So I ended up filing the petition with the help of the National Right to Work organization. And we had to get, I think, 30% signatures to kick that off, which we did. There was enough interest to do it. And then, I don't know, there was a year. It took us a year of just sort of campaigning within the company because there were some people who were fighting it, some very pro-union members. And then we eventually came down to a vote. We did a mail-in vote because of the three branches at different locations. So everybody sent in a secret ballot via mail, and then the votes were counted up.
Ray Kotz is with us, a Keurig Dr. Pepper employee in Oshkosh. Mark Mix, president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. As we talk about organized labor, you can join in questions and comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. I wonder, Ray, you know, in 2022, there was a Teamsters chapter in Illinois that reported issues working with Keurig Dr. Pepper. The chapter leader described a broken relationship with the company and difficulty in talking about, like, overtime and holiday schedules and safety. Do these issues sound familiar at all to concerns with Local 200 in Wisconsin?
No, as far as I'm understanding with the company, it wasn't we didn't really have any ill relations with the company. The biggest problem was, one of the biggest problems was we kept getting 5-year contracts, which in my view only support the company. You can't, when the COVID thing hit and then all the inflation after that, all the cost of living went up and we were locked into a 5-year contract under the old wages. These constantly just got 5-year contracts. And that was one of the biggest problems is you can't. So in my 20 years, this was like my fourth contract. Fourth time the union did anything for us, like negotiation wise.
Mark, I want you to jump in here in terms of 5-year contracts. Is this something that is typical you see in locals around the country?
Yeah, it is. They try, union officials try to get the longest possible contract they can. And as Ray mentioned, the employer is interested in that too, because that relationship, that monopoly bargaining agreement between the employer and the union that covers all the employees is basically locked in for that 5 years. That's what I mentioned, kind of the flexibility that comes with the ability to talk to your employer about benefits and cost of living and other issues that pop up, whether it be a 3-year contract, which is kind of the minimum that will be negotiated. But union officials would love to have 5-year contracts, and in many cases, employers would as well. And that's where the employee rights gets violated. That's exactly what Ray's talking about here, is that, you know, you had, 8-9% inflation, and all of a sudden this contract that you're under for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years says there are no, you know, there are no escalators, there's no chance to reopen. I mean, some contracts may have those provisions, but oftentimes they don't. And so, you know, you have the business on one side, the union on the other, and you have the employee that's left out of the equation that's saying, hey, all my buddies over here at Company B are getting, you know, they're talking to their employer about wage increases and benefit increases in a time of high inflation. And unfortunately, you're locked into that contract for 5 years. And so 5 years, I think, is the extent. That's the longest you can have under the National Labor Relations Act. But that's primarily where everyone want, where employer and a union wants to go, not necessarily where the employees want to go.
Mark Mix is president of the Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. Ray Kotz is with us, an Oshkosh-based Keurig Dr. Pepper driver, led a successful effort to remove the Teamsters Union by submitting a decertification petition last year, Call in with a question, share your perspective, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A unit of beverage drivers and warehouse workers from Keurig Dr. Pepper facilities in Eau Claire, Oshkosh, and Tomah, they submit a union decertification from a Teamsters local ending collective bargaining. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Ray Kotz is here, driver at Keurig Dr. Pepper in Oshkosh. Mark Mix is president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. Let's bring in Karen in Green Bay. Karen, what are your thoughts?
Well, our family was on my husband's private insurance for most years, and then I obtained a union job, so I started So then we switched everything to my policy because the benefits were so much better. And right now, I know that the right to work thing, and this all sounds great, and they're all singing their song, the private industries, because they can't get workers. So they're going to inflate their benefits and all of those things. But what's going to happen if it turns around? I have nothing bad to say about unions, but in private industry, just seeing what we went through in my husband's policy when they had tons of workers, things changed. So, you know, it was like up and down and up and down. Anyway,
Karen, thank you for that personal insight. You know, Ray, what happens when the economy sours? Do you feel like you have any leverage over wages and benefits or working conditions now?
Well, in a lot of our cases, we have Class A CDLs, so there's an open market out there. I mean, I can go anywhere and work. I know that doesn't apply to everybody, and you know, but us drivers, we're a skilled position. It's a Class A CDL position. If the company were to turn sour on us, I got a Class A CDL, so it's not like I'm restricted to this particular role, or I'm going to be poor out of a job.
Jacob in Madison is called in to ask, is curious, why did the people who supported the union, did they support it for political reasons? Did they support it for personal reasons? Ray, did you find out?
A couple of our guys were just ideologically driven. They were just pro-union just because, like, and I don't have anything against unions as a whole, or, I'm sure there's some good unions out there. I've heard stories of, like the United Auto Workers, they got an amazing package and raise this, last time. But our union was just, like I said, 5-year contracts, sort of ineffective. But some of the people were just, they were just pro-union because, you need a union, you need a union. We had a very minimal pension under the union, and now Keurig's given us a 7% match on retirement funds that we don't, to our 401ks. So we got better retirement out of it too. And some of the younger guys, some of the newer guys, they sort of got fear-mongered by the union. They were worried about like, oh, if we get rid of the union, you could just lose your job. The company could just fire you and there's no protection. But I kept trying to explain to these. I'm like, you got a Class A CDL. They're not going to fire Class A CDL drivers.
Well, let's take another call. Marty in Elkhorn is here. Marty, hi.
Thanks for taking my call. Good morning. Many, many moons ago, I was in a union. Our contract came up. We voted, I believe by ballots, that we wanted to go on strike, and we did. A couple weeks later, we got called back into yay or nay the new contract. This time, it was a show of hands, and boom, the mallet comes down. It's passed, and from that point on, I couldn't help but think that the contractors owned the union. Any sustenance to that? Am I just, crazy?
Marty, thank you for that story. Mark Mix, can you weigh in there on the voting itself in unions, whether by ballot or by raising a hand?
Yeah, Kate, that's up to the union and how they decide to do it. But the idea of going on strike, that's an internal union vote. And then approving a contract that's negotiated between union officials and the employer is, again, another union orchestrator or administrator vote. So how they do it, I think there may not be any official rules or regulations. Some unions may have constitutions saying, hey, a vote for a contract needs to be a secret ballot vote. And, you know, to Ray's point, that's one of the most important parts of all this is the ability for individuals to have their views protected from others because the situation does get very difficult. But most of the time, as Marty mentioned, you know, the vote is a union-decided process of how they vote, whether to go on strike and whether to accept the contract. And under the UAW contract, if you remember after the strike with UAW, there were several large local units that voted against the contract. I think three of the largest GM units voted against the contract that was being offered, but obviously the majority of people voted for the contract, so it was applied across the entire UAW system for GM employees and Ford employees and Stellantis employees. But there was quite a bit of opposition to the contract in some very large units among the UAW.
Mark Mix there, president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. Ray Kotz is with us, Keurig Dr. Pepper employee based in Oshkosh. 20 years with the company as we talk about organized labor and decertification. Call in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Yesterday on our program, we heard from senior economist Kristen Brody at the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. And Mark, Kristen said wages under unions tend to be higher.
When you have labor unions, people are likely to earn higher wages. Research has shown that for many years. And we know that African Americans have the highest union membership rate.
Mark, what do you make of those comments that belonging to a union equates?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, there's been a lot of research on that. The Economic Policy Institute, who you cited at the beginning, does that. They're funded by the AFL-CIO and lots of unions. But here's what happened. Let's look at the UAW contract that Ray mentioned just briefly and I talked a little bit about. I mean, you look, the highest wage that comes out of that UAW contract for manufacturing, for automotive manufacturing, will be $32.32. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the government entity that keeps track of this, non-union wages for manufacturing employees is $35.32. So about 17% higher when you factor in union dues. And so when someone from the Federal Reserve talks about wages in a gross sense, they're very rarely and very often do they not adjust for cost of living. I mean, obviously it costs more to live in New York City than it does in Provo, Utah. And if you don't adjust for the cost of living, yes, a union plumber in New York makes more money per hour than a non-union plumber out in Provo, Utah. But it's very likely that when you adjust for cost of living, you see that the non-union plumber in Provo, Utah is better off than the union plumber in New York. So those are numbers. You know, we all have numbers. I have numbers. I can cite numbers as well. But when you adjust for cost of living, what we do find is that workers in right-to-work states, whether they be union or non-union, have roughly about $3,500 more to spend in disposable income than folks in non-right-to-work states.
Let's go to Nate in Milwaukee now. Nate, what would you like to bring up?
Hi, thank you for calling me. And I looked at the vote totals for this, and I would like to point out that I think this is how a decertification election ought to be done, where the majority of votes went a certain way and that way was followed. And in contrast, you have the majority of the decertification elections under Act 10, where most of the workers vote to keep their union and it gets decertified and basically denies the freedom of those workers because of that, in addition to denying those workers from being able to use their union to ask for better benefits, as one of your guests has pointed out, is something that a lot of workers would like. As a side note, since we were comparing states, I think that a lot of right-to-work states are also further down south, and comparatively, they have a whole range of other social issues like worse murder rates and stuff like that. So there might be a different reason for lower costs of living in addition to that.
Nate, thank you for bringing those insights. And Ray, I want to land with you here. You've got 20 years with the company. Do you see many more? How do you feel about your employment going forward?
Like I said, I'm a transport driver. I drive down to Chicago every day for my job. I can retire out at this job, and as long as it doesn't ever get canceled or anything, I don't foresee me going anywhere else. I've looked. Keurig Dr. Pepper is very competitive on their pay. It's not like other places are throwing more money at us than Keurig Dr. Pepper is on as far as that goes, and the benefits are pretty good.
Well, Ray and Mark, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you.
Ray Kotz, driver at the Keurig Dr. Pepper facility in Oshkosh. Mark Mix is president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.